ideas and new technology are causing seismic shifts in the media industry. Where are we headed? What does it mean? Keep listening. Media strategist Gabriella Mirabelli talks with the brightest minds in entertainment and business. Meet the innovators, the risk takers, and the disruptors on the front lines of change from Hollywood, Wall Street, Silicon Valley, and beyond. The future is coming to a screen near you. Are you ready? This is the Up Next podcast with Gabriella Mirabelli.
Welcome to Up Next. I'm your host, Gabriella Mirabelli. My guest today is Bruce Taub. He's had a varied career ranging from professor of ancient philosophy to Wall Street executive. Bruce is currently an active arts philanthropist, the president of Nascentivity Funds Group, a private investment company in Miami, Florida, and also the founder, CEO, and managing editor of The Principal Post, an innovative digital publishing platform for self-authored narratives and press. It's this venture that's the focus of our conversation today. Bruce, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Gabrielle. It's a pleasure.
We live in interesting times. There's more content now than there's ever been in the past, and yet you saw white space and digital publishing opportunity. And underlying your venture is a philosophy that's very important to you and was central to how you thought about the business that you're building, which isn't something a lot of entrepreneurs lead with, but given that you were a professor of ancient philosophy, maybe it's not that surprising. So before we dive into the details of what the Principal Post is, could you give listeners some insight into what you felt the market needed and then the philosophical underpinnings that led you to start the Principal Post?
Sure. So as you mentioned, I taught philosophy at Boston College for a number of years, and philosophers love a paradox, or maybe they hate a paradox, but in any event, we try to solve them. And so the paradox that I wanted to understand and potentially resolve is that we live in an age today in which we increasingly rely on information that we increasingly distrust. And so that's kind of strange. It seems like the more we distrust this information, the more we rely on it, and vice versa. And the reasons for that are certainly understandable. So if we look at traditional news organizations and we consider the economic pressures that those organizations have been in or under, rather, for a number of years, it just makes sense that as competition has gotten greater, as the margins have become slimmer, these organizations who rely on their subscribers and their advertisers for their economic viability need to minimally be sensitive to and maximally perhaps even outright cater to the interests and the opinions and the worldviews of those groups. And so our challenge was to figure out whether or not there was a way to allow people who may or may not be getting a fair hearing in the press or may not actually be newsworthy, such that they wouldn't be covered at all, whether we could give them an opportunity to tell their stories objectively, which meant we had to eliminate subscribers and advertisers from the mix. And that's what we've done. I can talk more about that in just a little bit. But that was essentially what we were trying to solve. We started with a platform that we call In Fairness, which really sort of resonated with me, which is to give people a safe space to respond to or correct information that's out there that's just simply not so. It's untrue or it's misleading or it's unfair in some way, and to give them a place where they can have their say. And then from there, we realized that there was another opportunity to give people who wanted to create and share proactive content where they might not have another place to go, recent accomplishments and news and achievements and recognition and so on, and give them a place to do that with authority. So our mission, if you will, is to give an authoritative voice to every deserving story.
Right. Well, that's interesting. So you have the reactive portion, which is responding, correcting, having your say, your chance to respond, and the proactive content piece. So you have different content areas for these things. Now, are they different web addresses with their own identity, or are they nested within the Principal Post website?
Well, a little bit of both. So they all begin with a principalpost.com URL. And then the next portion of that URL will be the platform within the Principal Post where it's published, which would end with the client's name and typically a keyword of their choosing in order to help us with the SEO work. And so the articles reside on our site, but then we also share them, of course, with our clients so that they can distribute them, republish them, share them any place they like, and also include them in their own personal branding and marketing collateral.
Right. And do you have distribution partners?
We don't per se. We actually have a team of about 66 editors who between them have about 30,000 connections on LinkedIn alone. And that number becomes greater when we add in the other professional groups and networks that they belong to. And so we push out the work that way. But the SEO work, as well as the sharing of this content, is very much a collaborative effort. So a client doesn't just simply come to us, say, do this, and then kind of sit back. They can, but the way it really works well is that they play, and play an active role in sharing that information. And that makes sense because they're proud of it. These articles are impressive, they're highly stylized, they're fun to read, they're interesting, and they look great. And so people are very happy to share them on their own LinkedIn pages and the other sites where they're active.
Right. Well, and you had mentioned earlier with authority, and that means something pretty important and differentiating about your business. So what is the with authority? What does that mean?
Sure. So it really begins with our model. And so if we go back to the comments I made before about subscribers and advertisers, the idea was to have a truly objective platform. And so a portion of our authority, anyway, derives from our objectivity. And a lot of organizations that publish say that they're objective, but to the extent that they've got someone else's opinion to worry about, that's hard to do.
Right.
In our case, again, we don't have those in the mix. We're paid by our clients for our time and for our opinion about the stories they submit to us, but they actually can't pay to publish here. And that lends authority to our work as well. So in other words, when somebody reads an article on the Principal Post, they'll go to our site and they'll read about the way we approach the work. And what they'll realize is that we won't publish an article if we don't believe it. Mm-hmm. And if we don't find it to be both highly credible and well-intentioned. And if they are, we'll publish it. And if they're not, we'll give meaningful feedback to the client as to why we couldn't get behind it, which we hope will be valuable to them. So that's the first part. The second part is the team itself. I'm very proud of our team. It's a very impressive group of accomplished professionals from business and industry, from law, finance, from traditional journalism, media and entertainment, human resources, and academia. These are people who are highly respected by their peers. They have strong educational credentials. They know their way around a story. Mm-hmm. And so even if you think about it, in the course of somebody's business, they're an executive or in some kind of leadership position, you know, we're always being told stories. And we're often called upon to evaluate those stories and render judgments about them. So the people on our team have experience in doing that, whether they're right. Judgments about people or problems or processes. The whole idea is they know how to work their way from the evidence to a reliable conclusion. And given the fact that we have no financial incentives to render an opinion one way or another, we think that just sort of wraps up the notion that when we offer an opinion, it's an authoritative one.
Right. So it's this pool of deeply experienced editors who do the vetting of the stories. They're the authority piece. Is that right?
Yeah, I think I really do think it's two pieces. It's the individuals themselves, where they come from, how they're approaching the story, their experience, and their ability to render reliable judgments. And I think it's the inherently objective model that we've created.
Right. I mean, I think it can't be stressed strongly enough. It's not pay for play. You pay and you may or may right. not end up being mm-hmm. published. And so getting people to part with that dollar, that first dollar, is challenging. Is there some sort of self-evaluation tool or a set of guidelines that people can use to test themselves before they invest?
Let me think about what you're really asking there. The key test, I suppose, is when they submit their application, they check a box that says everything I'm telling you is true, right? And not intentionally right. misleading. And so that in and of itself tends to be somewhat self-selective. Put another way, since the client knows, and what he or she is paying us to do is to really vet this story, is to scrutinize it, no holds barred. And when they get through the other side of that process, which in most cases is onerous, but it could be, they'll be very proud to have been approved mm-hmm. on our platform. And so in a way, they're paying for that.
Are they the ones writing it, or is it a writer on the principal post who does the actual writing? Do they come with a proposal and an outline and information, but then it's written by somebody on as part of the principal post staff team? Or is it something that they write that's then edited by the team?
Yeah, it's really entirely up to the client, how active a role they want to play mm-hmm. in the production of the copy and the final article. So it's not infrequent that a client will simply send us the article they'd like us to publish. And so that's one approach. And we'll look at that. And again, we'll vet it and scrutinize it and verify the things mm-hmm. that need to be verified and so on. And if we can get behind it, and if it, you know, reads well, because we want our articles to be well written.
Can you get your article rejected simply because you're a dead bore?
No, that typically doesn't happen. We'll go ahead and, you know, we'll make it more interesting. The guideline, and you may be familiar with this, and the listeners to this may be familiar with it. So there's something called Section 230 immunity under the Communications Decency Act.
We did a whole episode on Section 230, so yes.
So you know all about it. You know that one of the things that we need to do in order to preserve our status is to not materially contribute to the story. So we have a lot of latitude for traditional editorial function. So if something isn't well written, we can improve on it. What we can't do is if the client says, "I was in New York on last Thursday, and that's why the story told about me can't be true," we obviously can't say that they were in New York last Thursday, or something mm-hmm. factual or material. But certainly we have a lot of latitude to say, I think it might read better if you said what you're trying to say this way. And so that's what we do. Now, in other cases, to your original question, the client says, no, I don't know how to do that. I don't want to do that. So just interview me. And in that case, we do an interview. We then take a transcript of that interview. And we use that to create the story. We send it back to them. Typically, what we'll do, particularly for an in fairness story where someone seeks to set the record straight, is we'll then do a second interview on the basis of what we heard first to clarify and to distill and so on and so forth. And then the product of that second round will become the basis for the final article.
Oh, that's really interesting. So having this very separate revenue piece, that it's not, that it's for work done as opposed to pay to play or an advertising model, things like that. So you don't have any advertising. You don't have subscribers because then their opinions start to sway the content. Are there any other revenue streams that you see down the pike?
Yeah, I think it is down the pike. At the moment, we're really just simply focused on helping a client to enhance their personal branding, their communication strategy, their online profile, whatever their objective is. And again, whether that's correcting something that needs to be corrected, having their say, finding their voice, or whether it's simply promoting themselves or their businesses to the extent that we can get behind the story. And we think that's incredibly valuable.
Right.
And we think the model, the economic model that we have makes sense. So we're starting there. And we'll see where it goes. But at the moment, this seems to be enough for us to focus on.
Yeah, so eat the elephant one bite at a time, right?
Exactly.
So let's talk about how it works, sort of the mechanics of how it works from the client side. So how an engagement works. Let's start, if I'm an enterprise and I want to share about a new venture, one of the things I notice about news in general is that things or people who already get press get more press, but new ventures, they have a hard time getting some love. And so this is a great opportunity for some of those ventures to create some content, which then they can leverage into people paying a little attention. So what is the process? And is the process for an enterprise different from how it works with an individual?
Yeah, it's not substantially different, but since you asked the question about enterprises, let's focus on that. So the platform is called InMarket. That's where we tell business stories. And typically that story will kind of have a hybrid focus. It will really be about the founder, CEO, senior executive, corporate spokesperson, mm-hmm. whatever it is, and kind of tell the story in their voice. But the focus, of course, will be on the company and what they're doing, what's new, and what's valuable, their value proposition, and what's unique, and so on. For all of the platforms, there's an application. It's slightly different for each. And that application, as I said earlier, is in part simply to give them the opportunity to check that box that says right. What I'm telling you is true. But more than that, and I think the most valuable part of it for both the client and for us, is it's an opportunity to distill the narrative. So what we find is, in the absence of some very carefully crafted questions, and by the way, some space limitations on the application itself, so people can't go on for 2,000 words talking about whatever it is that comes to mind. We really help them, I think, distill this right. narrative into something that's accessible mm-hmm. for the reader. And so for the most part, we say 3 points. You know, figure out the 3 most compelling things that you want to share, the things that are most important to you, the things that make a difference. And we're going to focus on that. To the extent that we need to add to it, we will. But let's start there. And that really is the function of the applications for each of these platforms, including, by the way, the one where people seek to right. set the record straight. And that's sort of interesting, too, because if you feel like you've been treated unfairly online, there's a lot of energy around your response and your approach, the story you want to tell.
Right.
And so, again, that can go on for just pages and pages. And so it winds up being a very valuable exercise in concision. Through the use of this application to help the client really focus on what's going to make a difference here and what's really important and what needs to be shared. So that's where the process starts. And then we've already touched a little bit on the copy production.
Quick question on that. Is it possible to request a specific editor? For instance, if I'm a company and I work in the tech telecom space, could I request an editor who has chops in that area, that is their area of expertise? Is that how the assignment would work?
For sure. So certainly you have the opportunity to go onto our team page and see all these folks and say, oh, so-and-so looks like a great fit. I'd like to see if he or she is available. Mm-hmm. And then we do that. But for the most part, that's what we do here in my right. office in any event. So we seek to create some kind of an intelligent match between the editor.
Right.
And the client, so that at a minimum, they're speaking the same language. And so if somebody's coming to us, let's say from the financial services space, you know, there's a jargon and there's kind of a way of approaching the business and the things you do every day that require some familiarity. And so we have that on the team, and that's the match that we would do. I should also add that there is a pretty broad spectrum of authority, largely based on seniority and professional mm-hmm. accomplishment on the team. And if somebody says, you know, I'd really like, that's a good example, Paul Rossi, the former publisher of The Economist, or Bridget Baker, who's on our team, co-founder of CNBC, I'd really like one of those two people to put their mm-hmm. names on my story. They can request that, and it's very likely that they'll get that. But as you might imagine, the ultimate fee for that project is going to wind up being a little higher if those are the individuals endorsing the story than somebody else.
So question, as part of it, you had talked about, you know, one of the benefits being the networks that these editors have. So when a new article goes out, not only might you want somebody who's an authority, but obviously the former editor of The Economist pushing out an article is going to hit a lot of eyeballs. You know, is it guaranteed? How does the organic sharing of the content, is there an express agreement that the editor of the piece will absolutely share the piece? Is there, do other members of the editorial team share the piece? Is that a requirement? Is that a nice to have, might happen, might not? How much, because obviously a lot, there's SEO, but then there's organic social discovery, and that piece is pretty important. So how does that work? And what's right. What's the client's expectation? What should it be around that piece?
Right. So to hone in on a couple of words that you used, no, it's not a guarantee.
Okay.
Our editors are free to, they're encouraged to, they see the value in sharing the work that they do.
Uh-huh.
But it's not part of the client engagement, and it's not a requirement of being on our team or doing work.
Okay.
Having said that, we understand that one of the really essential elements of the work that we're doing is getting found. And everybody on the team understands that. So everyone on the team has also made a commitment to support that effort and sharing those stories individually throughout their own networks. And also other people on the team sharing those stories within their networks plays an important role.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's really up to the client to do what they want with this story. Again, we're incentivized just as part of our own value proposition to do that portion of the work. But ultimately, the client knows what they want to do with that story, mm-hmm. where they want to share it, who they want to read it. You know, we might put it another way. The clients who come to us, as opposed to those who might very well hire a publicist and say, you know, get someone at the New York Times to tell the story with Vanity Fair. Happy, right? They could do that. But usually that's because they're attempting to reach a wide audience of people who, prior to reading the article, might not really care about that story or care about them mm-hmm. or even interested in them, but rather they just want people they don't currently know to read about it and have some kind of response and reaction. More often than not, the people who come to us have a very different focus, which is they imagine that they will be seeking new professional connections, seeking a new professional opportunity, seeking some kind of opportunity for leadership within their field or their community. And so they know that people are going to want to learn more about them because there's a particular event or need or circumstance that requires learning more. And so in that case, it's infinitely more important that the client get the article in front of the very people they want to read it than it is for us to simply push it out within our team. Except, as you say, to the extent that it helps in the SEO work that we do.
I see. So it really, so even beyond the people who are setting the record straight, where obviously there you have a conflict reaction that people are searching on a name, what the concept works around the fact that the other individuals or enterprises, the sort of sweet spot for working with this is that there is some other triggering event that this will key off of?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I mean, it's not, I don't think, so remote or unusual. One of the things we say on our website is we're not the news, but for the record.
I see.
Right, by which we mean that no one's going to wake up in the morning and say, you know, I think instead of reading the Times today, I'm going to read the Principal Post.
The New York Times, you're not going to take them out.
I don't think so. And more to the point, it's we're in a slightly different business. I mean, let's consider it this way. You and I were introduced by a mutual colleague, someone who happens to be on our editorial board, thought that you and I would be of interest to one another in the work. And so I don't know what you did, but certainly the first thing I did was Google you.
Right.
Right. And we just do that, right? We Google everything today before we make any kinds of decisions or you know, begin a relationship. By the way, that extends not just to professional relationships,
sure.
but to personal ones. And so in that sense, it's not necessarily that one triggering event that our clients are thinking about. It's simply the recognition that this is the kind of standard MO now. This is what you do.
Right. So if somebody is going to search you, this is going to come up. Right.
That's exactly right. And again, it's a collaborative process. So our clients who take a very laid back attitude about promoting our work for their own benefit may not see the same kinds of results as people who are more active doing that. But the vast majority of our articles do show up on page one on Google, typically within 3 weeks or so.
Well, that's important because people don't really look beyond page one.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. Unless, of course, what's on page one has no relevance to the people they're looking at.
This is true.
So we know that if a client comes to us named John Smith or Brad Pitt.
And good luck to you. I'm the other Brad Pitt.
Exactly. But then, of course, we have a solution for that as well, which is that we give the clients the opportunity to add a keyword to the URL slug, which aids Google in figuring out just exactly which Brad Pitt you're looking for.
I see.
And it eliminates all of the ones that, of course, our client doesn't want.
Right. So you have your website. Do you also have a separate LinkedIn page? Do you have a Facebook page so that your content also exists on these social channels? I keep going back to the social channels because people nose around on them as well. They live on them when they're, you know, spinning through things. So I'm curious about your presence there.
Yeah. So the answer is that we do. Actually, we have LinkedIn. We don't have Facebook at the moment. We probably will at some point. So far, that doesn't seem to have been quite as important. And yes, people can follow us on LinkedIn, and that's lovely. What they'll find there is our articles that we publish. But once again, if somebody's looking for you and they find the article we published about you, they're probably not all that interested in the article that we published about some other client that they don't really have any interest in.
Right.
So that's really, you know, it's different. And I appreciate that. There's a paradigm that you know, people work within, and they'd like to see us fit neatly within. And the fact is, we don't. We're taking a slightly different approach to this, and it's very much about that article, and frankly, less about the company, except to the extent, of course, that when the company is found, it helps the authority of the SEO work for the individual articles. But at the end of the day, that's really all our client cares about. Their article.
You launched in January, so you're brand spanking new. And I'm asking you all these questions, and it's like, you just launched. So, you know, fair enough there. It's early days. How are things going?
Yeah, things are going, knock on wood, really great. I'm very, very pleased. Clients are interesting. They've been pleased with the results. The SEO work is absolutely kicking in.
Awesome.
And so people are finding the articles, which is terrific. We're telling far more in motion stories, you know, about kind of what's happening now. This is what I did recently. I'd like to share. Mm. Then we are the in fairness stories, which is really where this idea began. But that also stands to reason.
Well, it's early days. I mean, I think as people become aware of it, right?
There's a lot of interest among the potential channel partners who will refer these clients to us and with whom we will partner. And when I say partner, what I really mean is that we don't advocate for the client. That's really important. It goes back to the idea that you can't pay to play. And,
right.
And it's the fact that you can't pay to play that makes our stories credible, right? Because if you could, we'd be pure advertorial, which is not what we're doing. Nevertheless, these channel partners find that the work we're doing is really valuable for a couple of reasons. The first is that they really have control over the narrative. And so we ultimately will approve or not approve a story once it gets to that point where we would be ready to publish it. But the final publication decision is the client's.
Right.
Ultimately, he or she presses the button that says, okay, let's do this. And so that level of control is of keen interest to these intermediaries and advisors, because when they do have a relationship at Vanity Fair, and they arrange for an interview, and they arrange for a publication, and they wait 3 months for the story to get published, and then it is, and then they read it, and they say, "Oh my goodness, that's not even remotely what we were hoping for."
Right.
So sometimes it's a hatchet job. So that will never happen here. The second thing that's really, I think, valuable to these channel partners, these advisors, is that if it turns out that we can't get behind a story, we give very meaningful feedback. In fact, we give an opinion that looks almost like a legal opinion, where we really take the client through the process and what we evaluated and the conclusions that we drew and so on. And if you think about it, if you are, and this comes back to your question about, oh, you mean people pay you and you may not publish? And you know, where's the value in that? The value is here, is that if you know in your heart that the story you're telling us is absolutely the real deal, everything you're telling us is true, and then we review it and we ultimately decide that we still can't get behind it. Well, that's actually a very valuable piece of information for you, because if the story is true, then you have to say, and we'll help you, we'll tell you why, what is it about the way I'm telling the story and communicating that isn't working, that isn't convincing?
Right.
And I need to understand that if I'm going to move forward. And so that piece of information turns out to be really meaningful. And one of the reasons that we found these agencies see the value in our work.
You've told them, no, we're not buying the way you're spinning it right now. Here's what we're seeing. Can they pay again a second time? Can they come back? Or once you've made an evaluation, is that a hard pass on that particular story?
So there's no hard rule around it, but it's highly unlikely that we would do that, because we're not saying we don't like the way the story is written. We're saying we don't like something that you're trying to say. And since the client has already told us that what they're telling us is true, they really don't get the opportunity to change it.
I see. Right. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been really interesting, and I look forward to seeing how you move forward and the ways in which you bring your philosophy to life through this business.
Well, thank you, Gabrielle. I really enjoyed it, and thank you for the opportunity to share our story.
We've reached the end of another episode of Up Next. I'd like to close by thanking my production team at Up Next, my friend Rob Naughton, the voice artist who recorded our open, and of course, all of you, the members of our audience. Thank you. I'll be talking to you again next time right here on Up Next.